You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
It is the Royal Blue Podcast. It is the morning after Everton's 2-0 victory over Liverpool in the Merseyside Derby, under the lights at Goodison Park, in the penultimate Merseyside Derby at the Grand Old Lady. I'm Ian Crowell with Joe Thomas and Gav Buckland, both looking extremely happy this morning. Joe, how are things to start off with?
tired, but very much morning after the night before, isn't it? And it's still on a high, I think. I mean, whoa, Goodison was sensational last night, wasn't it? Well, I mean, wasn't that just absolutely fantastic?
Absolutely. Gav, little weird, how are you? You know, no heavy heads this morning, be straight home.
I stayed for a bit after the game and did have a couple of well-known Italian lagers and bottles, whilst like most Everton fans watching the rerun of the game. So I was still getting photographs of people on WhatsApp who were still up about, you know, 1:30 in the morning, holding glasses of wine in the kitchen and stuff. So, yeah, it was, I think, let me say what Joe said, you know, absolutely fantastic atmosphere. Goodison at its absolute finest, and make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just on that, I was absolutely wired going to bed. I couldn't sleep, watch matches of the day. I don't think I went to bed till after 12. No one, I had to get up early for the kids, but you know what a night. We are live on YouTube, so please leave us a comment, leave us a question. Remember to give us a like and give us a subscribe on the Royal Blue YouTube channel. The support is greatly appreciated, and the more support we get, the more we can do these podcasts for you. But Joe, I want to start with you because obviously, you know, you've written some fantastic pieces, which, you know, sum up greatly the win last night. And I just want to read a line from one of your pieces, one of your opinion pieces, which is just fantastic. We were talking about it just before we went on air. So if you haven't given Joe's piece a read, or Joe's many pieces a read, give this one a read. But a line, here we go. Everton finally produced a performance befitting of the final days of Goodison Park, with a Merseyside derby display that meant its supporters could yell with vindication, "The city is ours." Just, you know, sum up, just try and sum up last night first of all. And I've just got goosebumps, you know, reading that out, Joe. I just feel 14 years you waited for that. You know, what a fantastic night.
The city is Everton's, yeah. The city is blue.
It is.
And I think, I mean, it's hard, you know, when you're, it's hard when you're in, like, very privileged in my position, very privileged. But sometimes you know that you kind of almost got a bit of a weight of history on your shoulders. Because, certainly, I mean, obviously, so much reports online now these days, there's very little physical product that you have. And the Echo is still one of those, is one of the only places where you will get, you know, quality written word on Everton Football Club. And hopefully these occasions marked in the most fitting way they should do. It feels like a lot of pressure. Like, I mean, it's 14 years, but it's not just 14 years, is it, of that? It's so many years of kind of hurt and pain and so many demons and ghosts to be banished. And that torture of the past mixed with the kind of the fear of the future, you know, everything that's going on around Devon at the moment, plus the move away from Goodison Park. And I think kind of one of my biggest fears over the last few years has been that Goodison Park, I think, is one of the best stadiums in the world. I love the Goodison Park. It's just, there are feelings I get at Goodison Park that I just don't get anywhere else, or I find it very difficult to replicate elsewhere. And, amid all the relegation battles and the survival fights and the points deductions, I feel like there have been big moments in recent years. Moments when fans and players have come together. There've been moments when, those supporters, as fantastic as they are, dragged a poor team over the line. And I just always worried that Goodison wouldn't get a big night like that, where it was a proper celebration. Yeah. Obviously, it's still got another year left. Yeah, there might be more to come, but it almost feels like a big release of pressure now. How much pressure is that taken off so much of next season and things like that? It's just. It was a night that was finally fitting the Goodison Park, and trying to kind of sum up that in words is basically impossible. But Everton deserved that last night. This wasn't a smash and grab. This wasn't backs to the wall. They were just emphatically better than Liverpool in just every facet of that game. Those supporters canting, the city is ours with vindication because it is, and it was just an absolute joy to be there and to witness it and to be able to. Write about it and talk about it now. Like, that was a special night, that was. And it was a special night for the right reasons. Obviously, it helps with the relegation battle. I think Everton were safe after Forest. I think they're definitely safe now. I know it's not mathematical, but I can't see that. I can't see them going down now from this position. But that wasn't the biggest story. The biggest story was just a derby in isolation. Yeah. And when you just looked at that on its footballing merits, Everton won, and they won on footballing merits as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gav, I haven't really got a question at this moment in time, but just because I know you're going to be, quite eloquent and how, your feelings.
Eloquent,
and
me,
up.
Yeah.
No, do you know what I mean? Go for it.
Joe did someone up brilliantly, by the way, last night. I was saying before we came on air, I don't know. You know what? After the game, and it's all games really, but especially last night, it's absolute chaos, isn't it, in and around the press box in particular. You got the people standing up and everything, like the rest of the ground. There's a whole load of noise and people congratulating. And there's people like, how do you keep a cool head? Well, everybody else is losing theirs, quite rightly.
Yeah.
And you come out with some great perceptive stuff. I don't know how you do it. I just said, forget it. I just like, you're the two-line report. You never forget it. I'm going on the aisle. Absolutely brilliant. And your piece summed it up. My feelings is, not sadness is the word. I think there was I think at the end of the game last night, and I think it is this might not happen again.
Mm.
Make the most of this. Hopefully there may be a great night next year. And we all know about Goodison under lights. A bit of sad, this may not happen again. But at the same time, if this is the last time, it's a great way to go out.
Yeah.
Having beaten Liverpool in the circumstances. And we all know our circumstances off the pitch. If this is the way we're going to go out the last great Goodison game under lights, then... I'd have that, and as you said early on in the week, it's the first game of Goodison played on the Wednesday, the 24th of April, since the Bayern Munich game 39 years ago, and there's obviously lots of similarities there. And that was my feeling at the end. Fantastic case, but tinged with a little bit of sadness. May never get this again. And I think people wanted to make the most of that emotion at the end of the game. And it was a strange game, wasn't it, really, in that it completely pans out completely differently to what I was expecting.
Yeah.
The Liverpool were the team going for the title. They're the team that probably more on it than us in terms of the results. But for the first half hour, about the first half hour, 75% of duels won by Everton players, weren't they? Which you would expect that to be the reverse, wouldn't you? But with the pressure on each of the teams. But it was us who came out looking like the team who needed to win the title. And that says a lot for the players, says a lot for Dyche and his coaching staff in terms of how they were motivated. And the first 8 minutes, it was a strange one, wasn't it? I think we had like 30% possession, but we appeared to be dominating the game. Mm. I was trying to get that, my head around it. And I thought we were set up. Dice, for the second time in 4 days, produced really good, you know, really good tactical setup. For me, man of the matches, I thought Garnagay was man of the match.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I Calvert-Lewin got it, but I think Garnagay was like Peter Reid on acid, wasn't he, for the first half? And I think there was a tactic that I was totally unexpected. We spoke on Monday about the midfield setup and stuff, and you know, we played Garnagay as a sole defensive midfielder on Sunday with two players in front of him, and that was very unusual. And we went back to the reverse last night with two defensive midfielders and one in front of them, which has normally been Decore, but last night was Garnagay, wasn't it? Because he'd obviously identified, they said this, like, their key player is McAllister. Yeah. Everything goes through McAllister. For the first 30 minutes, wherever McAllister went, Garnagay went with him. And he's got, I mean, I've spoken about his many weaknesses on it, on this pod, but one of his great senses is putting out fires, you know, away from the danger area and putting in tackles and just generally making a nuisance of himself last night. And he did that to perfection last night. And that, you know, he stopped McAllister playing, he stopped Liverpool playing. They got frustrated. They conceded so many fouls in their own half. And that enabled us to build momentum and build confidence. And I thought that was the key thing of the entire game, that first 80 minutes, that Garnagay just followed McAllister all the way around the pitch. That set the tone for the game from the start. And then for the rest of the 90 minutes, where Liverpool just spent, 90 minutes getting frustrated, I think. Yeah. And as Carragher said at the end, last 20 minutes, I think they just ran out of ideas. And when you saw two defenders coming on with, 5-10 minutes left, and you get beat 2-0, you're home and hosed, really. I don't remember seeing that, a Liverpool team virtue. I don't want to say give up. I think that's a bit disrespectful, but they sort of packed in, and in the last 5 or 10 minutes,
because they realised they weren't going to get any.
Because it was a must-win game for them. In a normal circumstance, you get beat 2-0, you thought, we'll take a draw here, make it 2-2. But they had to win. 2-2 no use to them last night. They had to win by, they had to score 3. In the last 15, 20 minutes, you thought, well, there's no way we're going to do this. And I think that maybe affected them. But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, right up there with one of the great Goodison occasions for me. I don't get the relegation stuff. They're not great occasions for me. But you look back on this, you know, last night is one of the, truly one of the great Goodison occasions for lots of different reasons. And I think everybody's treated it like that as well, haven't they?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles. We win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, Joe, just before we started recording, me and Gav were speaking, and I went into that game with a real sense of like tranquility a little bit about whether, if we win, we, you know, obviously fantastic. If we don't, it's obviously not the end of the world. Gav's just like touched upon it there. Was the pressure more on Liverpool than it was on us?
It was. I think the Nottingham Forest win was massive.
Massive, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, there was a reality, I think, that after the Chelsea game last week, I think Everton had 5 games left, and you remember being in the office and semi-joking to Liverpool supporters that Liverpool, the derby was going to be Liverpool's biggest game of the season. It wasn't even in Everton's top three. And I think there was a truth to that. Obviously, you know, the derby is still a derby. And I think there are many ways in which what happened at Chelsea have kind of helped sow the seeds for this win. But I think one of them is the fact that I think that the drubbing at Chelsea was so bad that Deitch knew. Deitch is an eternal pragmatist. And I think had this been a game against a Man City or an Arsenal, I wonder if he might have actually fielded a slightly weaker squad. Identifying Brentford as a bigger game, especially with, we know some of these players are playing on fumes. Garnaghy's just come back from injury. Calvert-Lewin had a knock. But I think that given how bad the optics were after Chelsea and how fragile, although he you know, got a grip and they got a big win against Forest, given how fragile and precarious the, you know, the mood and the atmosphere probably was around Everton, I thought he realised that he couldn't do anything other than go full pelt for the derby, which is how it should be. So, you know, I think he did that, and I think, you know, he got the reaction, got a response from his players, and I was relatively confident going into this. I mean, anybody that was there in the fan zone outside the ground before the game, they would have seen me and my Liverpool colleague Paul Gorse there giving our predictions. I predicted an Everton win. I did that in the press box as well before the game. There were a lot of people when I walked in pointing at me and going, it's you, you predicted this. I didn't predict it on the pod, obviously, a couple of days earlier. I text Matt Jones before kickoff saying 2-0 to Everton. But really, I didn't really have any logic for that other than, and this is a feeling that's been brewing in me for a long time, just the fact that this season's been so bad that you just kind of keep thinking at some point there's going to be a payoff. I don't say this wipes out the problems of all sorts that we've had to deal with and still have to deal with, but I've just been wondering for a while whether something like this might happen. But I couldn't tell you how it was going to happen or anything like that. But the best thing about it is that they deserved it. Like, they came out of the traps. You know, Deitch set them up perfectly. It's just the intensity with which they played. They just wanted it more. They were so hungry for that. It's interesting because there's a weird role reversal about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I came out of the office, here we are in Liverpool City Centre, and found the Everton squad outside going for like a pre-game walk around the city.
Nice.
Didn't know they were doing it. Obviously, it's normally me turning up at their workplace. I kind of, some of the players are a bit like, what's he doing here? And I was like, what's going on here?
Couldn't
like,
you got them in for the pre-game podcast.
Maybe. But it struck me how kind of how relaxed a lot of the players looked. And I thought, you know, that was perhaps a positive sign, maybe taking in the city and some of the atmosphere before the game. But when they were just so much better than Liverpool. It was the way they hustled, and Drissa Gueye led from the start, and it was on McAllister. And I just, the big talent point for me was, you know, I got to the stage where I was counting fouls in that first half. Now I tweeted at 6, I said 6-1, and I was writing 7-1 when Canati gave away to 7th, and I was writing that in our live blog when Curtis Jones gave away the 8th from which they scored. And it was just astonishing to me that they fell into that trap, really. And the reason they fell into that trap, we know that some of the better sides like to give away fouls high up the pitch, tactical reasons. There's nothing tactical about this because it was stupid. We know that Klopp said it after the game. You know, set pieces are Everton's biggest threat. We all know about that. They were giving away free kicks 40 yards from goal because they couldn't do anything other than give away free kicks because Everton were that much better than them. And I mean, I was fuming after 25. Like, I mean, I think McAllister committed 4 fouls in the first 25 minutes, didn't get a booking. And I was thinking, yeah, Curtis Jones gives away the foul. I think that might have been his second or third. I was just sitting there thinking, you see the penalty get ruled out for VAR, rightly offside, fair enough. But like, you're just there thinking, if Everton don't make this count, then. But they just kept creating, they kept giving the set pieces, they kept creating chances from it, didn't they? Calvert-Lewin had the header that Alisson saved. Tarkowski had a header straight at Alisson. Ben Godfrey had an effort at the back post, which he should have done better with. And you're just there and you're just thinking, like, am I actually watching this right? Because, I mean, it's not one-way traffic in terms of possession, but in terms of intent, it was only going one way. And I just, Everton deserved that win, and that's one of the most satisfying things about it. They play, if it was men against boys, they played like the men last night. Yeah. It was just so satisfying.
Yeah, picking up on Joe's points and your points as well, for too many derbies, certainly over the last 20 odd years, I'm not setting aside that Liverpool have got significantly better players than Everton. When it's turned up to a derby, we've played the occasion and they've played the game. Yeah. And last night, I thought it was the reverse, wasn't it? That we played the game and they were affected by the occasion and played accordingly. And their panic was, you know, shown up after the five minutes. The penalty 5 minutes in, wasn't it, really? And they were all over the place, weren't they?
They were.
And there's the argument with the referee and stuff. And they were obviously rattled, even at that early stage. And that carried on until we scored. And then we had that. The only time we were probably rocking a little bit was that 15-minute spell between the goal and half-time, which then came at a very good time for us. And then I was expecting a bit of a one-way traffic in the second half and to be really under pressure, being shots raining and stuff like that. That didn't really happen, did it? I mean, they gave the ball away straight away from the kickoff in the second half. It's sort of, yeah, all right, I'll have that. And the second half panned out completely differently to what I was expecting, apart from the shot that hit the post. I mean, there was a couple of saves from Pickford that he wasn't really stretched over, was he?
Yeah. You know? He was back in the first half. He was excellent, wasn't he? And I think that, obviously Diaz had the chance, Nunes had the chance, Robertson had the chance. I mean, Jordan Pickford, I mean, that's his sixth clean, that's your side, Gav, not my sixth clean sheet against Liverpool in his career, isn't it? And I think that, we've seen once again, and okay, we have the mad moments like against Bournemouth, depending on whose fault that was, and against Chelsea, but... You look at Newcastle, you look at that, save from Chris Wood at half-time against Forest, and no one has done more to keep Everton in the Premier League than Jordan Pickford has in the last few years. I hope he's recognised as that after his career. And I'm still, like I wrote into that match report, it was another performance that will have his haters frothing in indignation at his greatness, because he is. This is a man that sends grown men to supermarkets to buy inflatable dinosaur outfits, then has them crying behind their silicon cheeks, doesn't he? Like, as he produces another excellent display to ruin another team's ambitions, and he just keeps doing it again and again. I thought he was excellent again last night.
I think his critics will still find a way to criticise him, but if you don't watch him week in, week out, which is obviously what we do, you don't understand what he does for the team. Like the shot stops and the save that he's made.
He can give them ammunition, though, on occasions.
Yeah.
At Chelsea last week he did. And I think, consequently, he tends to get more scrutiny for his mistakes than possibly...
A lot of that comes with the fact that he's England's number one.
And I say, what did John Moores used to say? If you live on high hills, you expect high winds and stuff. And so if you're at the top of the goalkeeping profession in this country, then you should expect that pressure and that scrutiny, to be fair. And to be honest with you, rather than effective him, it appears to have strengthened him, doesn't it, really? Certainly. I wasn't a great fan of Carlo, as a matter. It shouldn't have been appointed in the first place, as you know, was my opinion. But the one thing he did do, I think he worked well with Pickford. Mm. Pickford came out of the Ancelotti reign, I think, a far stronger goalkeeper than what he did before Ancelotti came. And I think he's spoken about that. And I thought he was yet again excellent last night. But you could go through the whole team, couldn't you? You just say... X was excellent, and then put every Everton player in as the X couldn't really, because they were all there. And I thought, somebody like Ben Godfrey, I thought was terrific at both penalty areas.
Well, that's the one thing that we probably missed out when we saw that 0-0, that tackle that he made, the clearance back. And I think a couple of players Salah touched it back. And again, it was reminiscent of his best moments of the season. You think of Burnley and Luton, both occasions where he came back from out the pitch and didn't need to make wonderful clearances before. Opposition players tapped in an open goal, and again, it's just that one is another example of just how everybody was on it last night, and two, it's just that example of how everybody in that squad's got something to offer. And it's hard, isn't it? Because I mean, Everton have been at such a low ebb for so long, and you kind of lose faith in players because there's so much there that's going on beyond what we're seeing on the pitch that all contributes to it. But I think last night was a reminder, and some of the recent games have been a reminder that so many of those players that do get criticism have got a lot to give in the right circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Ashley Young, wasn't it? I think there was a Michalenko man on, and Young has obviously been under scrutiny, hasn't he, since Sunday? And you're thinking, he's going left back here, and you're thinking,
the Forest performance, you would think the worst, wouldn't you?
And when it was announced at half time, I think everybody knew Michalenko was going to be coming off.
I think he did well to the last.
I think he did. Yeah, absolutely.
Also, another brilliant performance against Salah.
And I was thinking, you could feel his name was announced, Young, his substitute. deep breath.
Is this the turning point? Yeah.
And I thought he showed all his experience. Yeah. And there's one bit in the second half where he ran completely crossed the pitch with the ball, didn't he? Got us out of trouble.
On the counter.
Yeah, and I thought he was excellent. I also get, there's that funny bit. We got a free kick about 10 minutes in the end, wasn't it? Where was it James Garner got tripped? And there was all of them discussing what they're going to do with the free kick, and you just got the impression he just whacked the ball into the stand to save time, because I don't think Young had any intention of letting the ball back into play, so he just battered the ball into the upper tier of the Battersea stand just to waste a bit of time. I thought that was good. And yeah, I thought that you can name all the players. We've not spoken about Calvin, I trust you will. I thought Calvin was excellent, and Brandtveit was just Brandtveit, wasn't he, Pat?
Yeah, Cavalier was brilliant, wasn't he? I mean, Konaté had a torrid time, and it's one of the things just written, obviously, second time in two derbies this season that he's been hooked before the end, isn't he? Because it was a tacit admission from Klopp, I think, that he should have had a second yellow in the home game. 0-0, of course, Everton were looking more than comfortable in that game, even with 10 men, weren't they? And it took a red card that wasn't given to Liverpool, and then a penalty before they broke through him. Kind of wondered if that was almost a bit of karma last night, the torrid game that he was given by Calvert-Lewin, because again, you just look at all those silly mistakes that were being made by Liverpool players. Obviously there's those needless fouls being made in the centre midfield, but the amount of times that if you look at his dual figures, they're not that good for Calvert-Lewin last night, which is strange because I felt like he won everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think where it comes down to is obviously it wasn't so much what he won in the air, but how often did someone like Konaté let the ball bounce, and then Calvert-Lewin is just an absolute expert just then getting his body in between the defender to drop him ball. He just wins free kick, or he just turns him.
Yeah.
It was just, that was Calvert-Lewin. That was Calvert-Lewin at his best since Dyche's first game, the win against Arsenal, I thought. And I think that was Everton at their best, certainly at Goodison Park, since that win against Arsenal, Dyche's first game. That is Dyche football at its best. There is a potential room for that at Goodison Park, I think. I think they can be. I think Dyche football and Everton can be happy bedfellows. But obviously, it needs to be like that, as opposed to some of the... Well, we've seen a lot that hasn't been like that, haven't we?
that's the problem, though, isn't it? And I think you're absolutely right. I think as long as we're winning games, then that's fine. And Sean,
well, even if compared to they beat Burnley, I mean, that was Dyche football at its worst, wasn't it? Like,
but obviously, I didn't go to that game, but I know people. I did watch it, but people who left Goodison Park were seriously worried for what was to come in the coming weeks. And let's face it, it hasn't been all our own way. Okay, we beat Forest, we beat Liverpool, but we got trounced by Chelsea, haven't we? I mean, Gav, just on that then, I mean, Dyche has faced serious criticism, hasn't he? To the point where...
Quite rightly so, by the way.
No, yeah, absolutely, yeah. But to the point where his future is, it's probably not really been in doubt, but we know, as is the modern day world of football and social media, fans have been potentially calling for Dyche to go. But, credit where credit's due. Last night we talked about how right he got it, the intensity, the desire. It was all there. The players were on top. As Joe's mentioned, it was Dyche football at its best. Is it... first of all, has he bought himself another season?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, I'll go back to what I said last week was that I think, and especially since the result since, I think we'll look back in 3 or 4 years' time at this season and say, we got that many points, haven't had 8 points deducted and finished that high up of the table, because we could get more than 40 points this season without after the 8 point deduction. So I think his performance needs to be seen in that context. It's not so straightforward, though, is it? Because the flux off the pitch in terms of ownership is obviously going to impact his future employment prospects with us, isn't it?
That's a big factor.
That is the biggest factor, isn't it, really? And, you know, see how that plays out. However, what you would say is he's given himself a far better, he's got a far better chance of being the manager for the next 12 months than what he was this time last week, isn't he? You know, I mean, his press conference last week, he didn't appear to be too happy, did he? He's done it. I don't think you can look at last night in isolation. You've got to see in the context of the Forest game, which felt like a massive win, certainly after the Bournemouth game, Dyche's biggest win and most important win. And I think you've got to see those two games together. There's the Forest and Liverpool game, and he's done an enormous amount of, you know, good work in that to justify staying on for next season. And so there's lots of movable parts there. I think it's out of his hands in terms of his performance as a manager between now and the end of the season in some respects. But he's put, Birdie was sort of drifting away from the conversation for the manager next season. I think the last week has shown he's back in the conversation. And he's only got to see the scenes at the end of last night, really. And he's shown himself to be tactically quite cute as well in that time. And he obviously motivated the players brilliantly last night as well. And spot on, really. But I'm not sure whether that influences the overall management decision. That'll be the other factors that will determine that, I think. Eh?
What do you think, Joe? I mean, obviously, it was his first Merseyside derby at Goodison Park, and he did very well. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the conversation really is about Dyche and next season. I think the conversation's about Dyche and whether or not he's the manager that leads Everton into the new stadium. Yeah. Firstly, obviously, there's no one there to sack him at the minute if they were that way inclined. And I think the biggest mistake that Everton could make this summer is to try and run before they can walk. Say, for instance, they get new owners in. Well, obviously, the most likely candidate of any new owners is going to be 777. Yeah. They don't come in and spend a lot of money. Even if it was somebody else who had a lot of money to spend, the profit and sustainability regulations mean that Everton were already so close to those limits that it's going to be very difficult to have money to spend. Yeah, this is a side that will probably lose and probably have to lose at least one of its biggest players in the early parts of the transfer window to try and satisfy further regulatory issues. There's a chance it starts next season with a points deduction because we've still got the outstanding hearing over the best part of £20 million of stadium interest loans for with the Premier League. There's still a lot of flux off the pitch. I don't see a scenario in which this isn't a side that's scrapping again next season. Obviously, it can. We know from the points that it should have on the board this season, it should be scrapping around the mid-table mark. You know, it should have 8 points more than it is for what Dyche has done with that squad, and that's absolutely remarkable. When I look back at kind of one of the, you know, there've been so many mistakes with Everton, but I think we all, like I definitely put myself in this, but I look back to the Frank Lampard survival year and that summer. And I thought, perhaps naively, that Benitez-Lampard year, Everton ended up in a relegation battle because of a perfect storm of misfortune, essentially. Some really, really bad luck with injuries. The mess of having Benitez in there and what that did, and then his departure for everyone else. And some bad refereeing decisions, bits of bad luck and things like that. I kind of thought that Everton were naturally 5 or 6 points better than they were that season. If you just pulled that squad out of the situation that they were in, gave them their summer holiday and then brought them back and freshened everything up, they'd naturally be better. Obviously, we know that they weren't. And I think they spent the best part of, or committed the best part of £100 million of fees, thinking that they were a mid-table side rather than a relegation fight. And, well, we've seen what's happened since then. Two more relegation fights. Yeah, I think this needs to be another season. I think this needs to be another summer of pragmatism. I don't think there's anybody better for that role than Sean Dyche. Whether we like it or not, there are clear issues. I think it's right that people were questioning him last week and at various points. You set a club record for winless Premier League games. You go 4 months without a win, 4 months without a home win. Yeah, and then you, even after the Burnley win, you then lose 6-0 at Chelsea, and the performance that it was on a game as important as it was then, you have to be expected to have questions being asked about you. And it may well be true that if the club was more stable off the pitch, he wouldn't have survived that. But again, we have to play the situation, and the reality is that Everton is still a very difficult situation. It's likely to still be even the best case scenario, and owners that we all like and get behind come in and have money to spend in the summer. It's still probably limited finance. It's still probably lose some of the better players. It's still having to potentially deal with points deductions. It's still having to deal with the transition of new ownership and everything that that brings in, because it will bring change internally at that club. There will be structures. There will be departments that get relooked at and perhaps remoulded, depending on who's making those decisions. I don't think there's a better person or a more obvious candidate to lead Everton into that kind of through that period than the person that spent, you know, the last year fronting up to the cameras, because, you know, for all the other problems that the club's had to deal with so far, you know, that squad needs to look at. One of the great things about last night is the fact that, you know, I think for the first time in 3 years, I think we'll all be able to sleep soundly in May. I think Everton are safe for the first time since he started, for the first time since he got the job at Everton. Kevin Farwell can have at least have a run up to the summer. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff off the pitch that he won't know what he's dealing with, and that includes the PSR stuff, you know, because we don't. There's a big difference when whether Everton win or lose that outstanding hearing with the Premier League makes a big difference to what Everton can and can't do in the transfer market. And everywhere else, but at least Farwell's now got time to play. If he really wants to sign, you know, Josh Brownhill or Che Adams on a free, you know, both players that are heavily linked, have been heavily linked with Everton in the past, and out of contract this season. Well, now he can have those conversations with their agent, saying, "Well, we are a Premier League football club, just like the other teams, and might be having those conversations." Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. And I think really for what Everton need more than anything right now is stability. And Sean Dyche is someone that provides it. Might not always be easy to watch. Isn't always easy to listen to, isn't always easy to stomach. But again, you know, if this is to be a turning point, if then, you know, what we have to make sure is that the foundations for the whatever success comes in the future are firm and strong and can withhold some turbulence, because that's been the problem at Everton for so long. And I think Dyche probably is the best person to do that. So for me, yeah, that's it. Like, it's less about kind of short term and more about what he's doing for his long term legacy. And, you know, you look back on this, and like Gav said earlier, it'll be interesting to see what in 10 years time we do when we look back on this period. I mean, he kept Everton up when they were down last season. He's going to keep Everton up with minus 8 points this season and no money to spend in a transfer market. He's given Everton a first home derby win in 14 years. I mean, those are some pretty big ticks against his name.
No, I agree with that, Joe. And just to come on to you, Gav, I think obviously stability is absolutely key. Is there a danger, though, Gav, that if Dyche was to be given money in the summer, in the transfer window, he would obviously, him and Thelwell would look to buy players that would suit Dyche's system and the way he would like to play. Now, we've already spoke about how that can be beneficial if we're winning football games, but it can also be a negative thing if we're losing. Is there a danger then that if we bring, I don't want to say dross, but, you know, players that suit Dyche's style of play, that when it, or if it doesn't work out, that we're left with players maybe potentially on long-term contracts who then, after about 4 or 5 years, we go, well, we can't get these off the books. I'm just trying to play devil's
advocate. I know what you're saying. It's like any manager with 1 year left on his contract. I think it's 1 year, is it? Yeah. You know, it's a bit like a player, isn't it? What do you do? Do you extend their contract and allow, you know, give them time to bed in those players, or you just go with it? I think we get too hung up on Dyche's style of play, to be honest with you. You could say that about any, if that was the case, would you give money to any manager? Really? No, not, you know, with 1 year on his left on his contract.
If I can just interrupt and you carry on, I'm not bothered about his style of play as long as you're in football matches.
I'd be surprised if you got money, by the way. But that's a different, you know, picking up on Joe's point, I think it could be the opposite. But I wouldn't get too wet up about that. I mean, when you say Dyche's style of football, what did you say last night? Did we play attritional power stuff last night? I don't think we did we?
No.
We played intense, clever, and when we got the ball, in the point of the skillful football last night, I thought. I mean, Gary Neville said that on commentary in the first half, that I was looking at it about 2 o'clock this morning.
Well, what's changed then? What's changed since, like, obviously we know we've had a bad run and we didn't even play bad in some of those games, but certainly even like Burnley was terrible. Chelsea, he got it tactically wrong.
Burnley's always going to be a terrible game, wasn't it, really? Chelsea, maybe Chelsea was a wake-up call. Okay. For both the manager and players, and there was a few butts kicked in the dressing room, and not just the players, probably. And I think it's no coincidence since the nine days since then, you know, I think that was probably a realisation that actually we're really in the mire here, and actually we need to up our game. And I think that's been the big difference really since the Chelsea game. And he's I think Dice is up this game as well in that. He's obviously thought a lot more tactically about what he's going to be doing. Did that on Forest on Sunday. Obviously thought really hard about the finer details of the game last night in terms of all like set pieces, closing their defenders off, you know, stopping Van Dijk jumping for the ball, you know, all that type of stuff. He's obviously thought a lot more about it. And I think that those are the big differences, I think.
Made some big decisions though as well, dropping players who haven't been performing, specifically Anana, who, you know, you would probably say a couple of months back was one of the first names on the team sheet, and now he's part of the matchday squad, but he hasn't been part of the first 11.
And Anana's dropped himself, hasn't he? To be fair, I think both in his performances, and he obviously missed the game, and he said he'd had carrying enough from training. I think that was a pretty easy decision to make, really. I thought maybe some of the, you know, last night, I think he'd obviously going to not play younger right back, put Gomez back on the bench. And yeah, I get that. He's made some big decisions, but some of them have been made for him by players' poor form. I thought the smart decisions were tactically on Sunday, playing just one holding midfielder and two midfielders up the pitch. And then, but doing the reverse last night, but making Garner Gay, the player of the pitch, to sort of get in their faces a lot more, particularly McAllister. So I think just thinking about the game more smartly. And I think some of that has come from the Chelsea match, but I think we were just abject, weren't we?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Joe, are we okay with time, or are we
a little bit more? But yeah, I'm gonna have to get off a minute to finish.
I think far. Joe's gonna shoot off, and we'll carry on for another 10 minutes or so. But back to the game then, because obviously, you know, let's face it, it was mammoth. It was really good. What I would say, Joe, is it was more a release of everything from this season. Okay, it was an accomplishment to beat Liverpool, but I didn't really. It was a weird feeling for me afterwards. I didn't feel like, oh, Everton ever have massively achieved something here, like we won something. Okay, it's not mathematically, but we look safe. Fantastic winner over our local rivals. But did you get like a weird sense, or were you just, you know, joyous at what had happened?
Yeah, I mean, I got a sense that it was bigger than just a derby win. Like, it did feel very cathartic. I mean, that's the whole point. You know, a night befitting the Goodison Park in its final days. It felt like that. It felt more of it felt like an experience that extended far beyond just the kind of realms of what was going on the pitch and even in the stands. Like, you know, like we started this podcast, like it felt like a genuine story of that reason. Just the fact we final it's probably just, it's dependent because yeah, days of catch up. This would have been dark. Yeah, the win has so much more significance than. One, obviously, it's a derby and it banishes a lot of demons as a result of that. Two, I think it's the fact that Everton actually played well and deserved to win. And I think that, you know, we have seen wins at Goodison Park this season. Burnley, you know, we talked about that. Even to a certain extent, Forest and some of the others where, you know, Everton have got over the line. But did they deserve to win or did they play well and win? You know, that you could have question marks over that. This was an emphatic display on a big occasion, you know, in a game that meant something. And I think that means something to Goodison and Goodison's legacy.
Okay, I mean, just back to the game again, Gav. When we got the penalty and it was kind of overturned for VAR, like we said, rightly so.
Yeah.
Usually in the past, like you say, we started off really well, great intensity, right into Liverpool. when we got that penalty, everyone's buzzing, but it gets turned over. Usually in the past, it's kind of like things would have turned, but we didn't let it, did we? Like, you would have expected Liverpool to have been boiled by that, but that decision.
I think just that added to their general anxiety about stuff, really, to be honest with you. You can tell in the reaction to it. I just felt that that day. I mean, there's a thing, isn't it, that, you know, we can be in that, and this is what happened with Derby. I have a problem with Derby. We always say, like, get into them and stuff like this, and, you know, bridge that gap to ability. But the best teams will also get into you, and ultimately then what their skill level will then win the game. And I thought last night, I mean, let's face it, our intensity was great. I thought we played fabulous, but they also contributed towards it because I thought they were really, really poor. I think they played the occasion, not the game. And so consequently, you say that, but I don't think they reacted well to it. I mean, it sort of fueled their anxiety that they just got away with one. And because we carried on with the pressing and being really clever in which we handled the game, I don't think that was ever an option, really. You never felt deflated afterwards. You just thought that, well, actually, at some point we're gonna score here. And we did, didn't we? Mm. We had a couple of other chances as well in that time. So you felt deflated for about 30 seconds. Yeah, and also as well, because it was clearly offside, wasn't it? If it had been marginal offside, maybe, you know, we think there's a Forest, we think there's a major injustice. But because it was clearly offside, oh, yeah, okay.
He took the time over the actual goal, though, didn't he, do you think? I mean,
there was a lot to deal with, wasn't there, for the goal? I mean, the ball was ricocheting all over the place, wasn't it?
So. See, from my vantage point, I thought it was because they were checking, because Calvert-Lewin got a touch, that he was in the offside position.
Yeah.
And did he get the touch before it crossed the line? Mm. But I don't think that was the case. Yeah.
Oh, Brandt Pate had come from an offside, being lined down in the air, hadn't he? And then that's what I thought. But they were looking at the free kick, weren't they? There is no
free kick. I think everyone knew once Wayne really started banging on the windows to tell everyone the lines were green.
Yeah.
Yeah, having watched the game again last night, that is one of the top of VAR here, but is, you know, in the ground only more than quicker than on the television. I think that's wrong. To be honest with you, I don't think it deflated us, if anything, it made their anxiety worse.
Yeah, well, we've got loads of questions and comments coming in. We've got over 200 people watching, so thank you for and that's just on YouTube, so thank you for that. Appreciate your comments coming in.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about individuals, but, you know, Calvert-Lewin and Brad Waite are going to get the plaudits, but we've already mentioned, I thought Godfrey was just outstanding.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Excellent.
I just thought he was. And you've already mentioned the Drissigay. Does he get a new contract?
Am I right in saying that we've got an option?
Club have got an option.
Yeah. So there's an option. It goes back to Joe's point, doesn't it? Stability. And maybe the lack of transfer activity elsewhere. I think he's done enough. Based on last night's performance and recent performances, you know, including Sunday, I think he's done enough really to justify it. But again, it's one of these things. It's all ownership, isn't it, and what happens elsewhere. But I thought for a player who I've criticised quite a bit on the podcast, both in his first spell and the second spell, I've been really impressed by him the last few games. I thought last night he was spot on. You know, Peter Reid-esque. Both, you know, in the way he pressed and used the ball as well. And it's, all things being equal, I wouldn't have a problem extending his contract for another 12 months on the basis that I think stability next season is paramount. And he's done enough to justify that. Really this season, hasn't he, really? I mean, he's had a few off games, but I wouldn't say... Yeah, he's been better this season than he was last year.
You're probably not going to get a better player for, you know, the price that we would pay for someone, so you might as well just try and sign him up to a deal for obviously on a free transfer. Well, it's not free transfer, you just sign him up to an existing deal.
Yeah, on this existing contract. I say it depends on the movable parts elsewhere, but I wouldn't have a problem with that if it's part of a wider strategy, as Joe was saying there, of stability and keeping those here that we know about and the manager knows about, and I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Joe, happy to let you go if you need to shoot off. We're going to carry on for another five or 10 minutes just because we've got quite a few people on. So
just on Drissigay, it's an interesting one because he's on very big wages.
Yeah.
And it probably depends on where they are, the finances. It's probably, you know, it's that versus the stability, isn't it? So, yeah, there are a handful of very big contracts that potentially fall off the wage bill this year. And it'll be interesting to see whether the approach this summer is more a case of, you know, try and finally get that wage bill down, you know, to a consistent level that they're happy with, or to take a few chances, or to keep a few bigger earners. I think there's certainly a value in keeping him for stability, if you bear in mind that I think we all think that Amadou Onana is probably going to go. I think we would be surprised if Dele Alli was to stay. And I think we'd probably be surprised, although he's had some good moments this season, if Andre Gomes about to stay. Yeah. So there's some big wages that go off the books. And if you're looking at, you know, taking two of the five names from that centre midfield, then having Idrissa Gueye, even if it's having him as a squad player rather than a starter, then, you know, there is definitely a sense to keeping him, isn't there? But the wages, again, might be the stumbling block. And again, that's another reason why the ownership issue is so important, because we need somebody with a strategy to come in who's got a strategy which says this is what we're thinking of, this is what we're working towards financially. Does Idrissa Gueye fit into that or not? And that's it. And that's also where stability over Deitch, and, you know, Kevin Farwell's only got a year left on him as well. You know, Everton can't make the mistake of signing people. I mean, it would only be 1 year with Idrissa Gueye, but they need to start formulating these strategies now. And, you know, is it Idrissa Gueye, or can they find, you know, two younger centre midfielders for 40, 50 grand a week each and get that instead? Or, you know, so that's it. You know, so
the only problem with that, then that involves possibly a transfer fee. And the one thing they haven't got is hard cash in the bank. And they may find that actually, you know, the cheaper option, though, is on big wages. Is this for 12 months?
Well, that's clearly the point that they got to with Abdoulaye Doucouré.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may well be the case of just
out of all the players, then there's 6-7 players in their out of contract in the summer. He's the one I would imagine is most likely.
Yeah,
you would think most likely to stay.
Yeah, I think there's a chance for Coleman as well.
So I think to stay and be part of the first team pool, as it were. Yeah.
Can we go into Brentford? I know we're not mathematically safe, but we go into Brentford thinking that, you know, we are safe now. Luton have got to probably win 3 out of the last 4.
That's what we're all celebrating at the end, wasn't
it? And then it's not just Luton have got to do that, and Forest also have to do that. So.
And we've got to lose.
And we've got to assume there's no further points deductions and all this type of stuff.
Deitch and his best mate Thomas Frank.
Yeah, nice little. Funny enough, it's funny how these things look, don't they? 3 or 4 weeks, are we thinking the Liverpool game's going to be the really difficult one, and the Brentford Wales go, they're not doing anything. That's it. And it's come out a slightly different way, isn't it? But actually, of the 3 games now, if you look at them, like Brentford could be the most difficult. They're flying at the moment, haven't they?
They could have their feet up as well, though, because they're pretty much safe as well.
Self for a draw, Thomas, before the game might be the conversation. We'll have a bit of a social event afterwards. I think Brentford's a difficult game, but that Forest game was such a massive win. That it's just sort of taken the pressure off a little bit. That last night would have been different if we'd even drawn against Forest.
Yeah, it would have. I think so.
That was the benefit of it. But I think the confidence coming into Brentford. Why not? Three games in a week. You know, but the supporters. You know, it should be another good atmosphere. You would hope. You know, but leave that one for Saturday. I'm just basking in the glory of last night. To be honest with you, I think that go back.
Gavin, I'm off to Finch Farm. All right.
Press conference.
He's showing off there, isn't he? Yeah,
that's what it is.
Couldn't Sean have come here, Joe? No.
The work never stops.
Yeah.
Cheers, Joe. I'll see you later.
I think that was part of it last night, wasn't it? We were celebrating the derby win, but we were also celebrating Goodison, weren't we, as well?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, that's the thing. I know you get, small team and all this. You've beaten your neighbours in the one-off, not one for 14 years. But I don't think the celebration at the end was totally all about that. I think it was about celebrating Goodison and Goodison under lights. And I think that was really the important bit for me.
Yeah, and the one thing about that is because I said before, I didn't feel like a sense of, like, massive achievement. Like I said, I did, because we beat Liverpool and, you know, effectively we are safe. But you know, you'd always hear from, like, Liverpool fans and even some neutral fans, well, Just because you beat Liverpool, you've completed your season. But even Liverpool, I've heard some Liverpool fans speaking. None of them have said that this time. They know they were effectively beaten, justly beaten. And I just think you're spot on. The penultimate Merseyside derby, potentially, obviously, we could get them in the cup, but at Goodison Park. And, you know, look what's happened. They didn't want it with us last night, and it shows.
No, yeah, but that was also because of us as well. And Dice spoke about this afterwards, really, and it's an understandable reaction, which I agree with, is it's for the fans, wasn't it, as well, last night, wasn't it? You know, so it wasn't just a derby win, right, okay? Potentially the last great night at Goodison under lights. It was also all the stuff off the pitch that the fans have had to suffer over the last 3 years. It felt like a bit of a letting all that out as well, just releasing the pressure a little bit as well. So I don't think it was just last night about the derby win. I think there was other factors for it, and that made it, let's face it, even better, didn't it, really?
No, it is. It obviously puts a dent in their tight lobes as well.
I didn't look at that. There may be other fans and you look at it, but I don't get that. The impression last night that was it was important. It's good to have a bit of to be satisfied over it. But I just think last night was about us, not about them, and that probably reflected on the way we performed.
No, yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe Thomas has gone. He's gone to Finch Farm for Sean Dyche's press conference, which I think is about 1:30 usual time. And I think it's actually a bit later because Joe's got an interview with someone else beforehand. But we'll finish off with questions, Gav. A couple of comments. Is there anything else you want to speak about before I just read through these comments?
No.
I don't know whether you're going to be on the pod tomorrow. Are you free? I was going to say, you're going to give us a Brentford prediction if you're not on the pod tomorrow.
I'll give a Brentford prediction, 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw.
Yeah, just in case.
Oh, we can't concede after what's happened over the past couple of weeks.
Take a point. Will you take 7 points from 3 home matches, one of them Liverpool?
Yeah. I'm just so glad that it's going to be a nice, effectively boring end to the season rather than, last game or second to last game, we must win. You know, it's heading that way anyway.
You can go up a couple. It's about £3 million a place. Couple of places.
Yes.
A couple of places could make the difference between meeting PSR and not meeting PSR.
Do we get the prize money for the position that we should have finished in?
I argued that case, didn't I?
You did.
That was one of the points we should have made about we're effectively being fined. But that was about PSR. Let's talk about last night.
That's another podcast.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Okay, we'll go through some comments because we've got our regulars comment and we've got a few newcomers comment. And so, Two Wheel Lucas, it's raining heavily here, but strangely the skies are blue. Isn't that a nice feeling? Is it nice to feel a drop in pressure now? I mean, that's it, effectively. I just feel like after the Forest game, we've talked about it, I know, but that win was just absolutely massive, and I just felt the pressure was nowhere near on as what it would have been.
Oh yeah, I just said that. Yeah, and last night was just releasing the pressure of, the 3 years of angst that everybody's had, and frustration, and being really obsessive over the way stuff's gone on and off the pitch.
Interesting comment here from Gareth Davis. Feels like a slightly more aggressive approach from Dyche over the past week. Yeah, has led to better performances, and that's got the fans more on side with the atmosphere leading to a fantastic result. I mean, there just seems to be a massive shift from the Chelsea game alone, following on from that.
With Dyche?
The way the team's played.
Yeah, absolutely. It also is contractually obliged to say is passive-aggressive move of wearing a tracksuit rather than a than a collar and tie combo. But yeah,
I saw that stat that you put out last night. What is it? 100%,
32% wearing a collar and tie, 100% wearing a tracksuit. Where's win ratio?
It's these little things that make all the difference.
I don't think he likes talking about it, does he? But yeah, I think so. I think there's been. I think we've just been smarter tactically last two games than the opposition, and I think that's been reflected on the pitch. I thought we got it absolutely spot on last night.
Ian Lyons, we've touched on this already, but Ian Lyons said, should Garner get a new contract? He was truly immense last night. Thoughts, lads?
Yeah, he doesn't need a new contract. It's just he's got a year extension he can get.
Yeah, so he's got no say in that whatsoever. It's just up to the club.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Stuart Brandwood, Gav. I think this is in reference to your Ashley Young comment before. No way that Young free kick was deliberate.
Yeah, I was just probably tongue-in-cheek there, to be honest with you. Yeah, it just went so high over the bar. It didn't look exactly, that you wanted to get it on target, but tongue-in-cheek.
Robbo says, if Dyche needs to remain our manager, then it means the club remains in a poor position in terms of funds. I mean, we already know the club's in a poor position in terms of funds, so...
Yeah, but we don't have the ownership. How that ties into it in terms of if somebody else comes in, what money will be available. We do know, obviously, we've got restrictions of what we can spend anyway. And Dyche as part of that, as Joe said eloquently before, is a key thing. If we're going to have a lack of funds and we need stability, then Dyche is in pole position, isn't he, really, logically speaking?
Interesting one here from Kraft Matthew. Do we now withdraw our appeal as it does run the slight risk of the Premier League increasing the points deduction?
That's an interesting one, isn't it? You could argue that. Yeah, I mean,
I think Forest are in a massive bad position.
Probably. I mean, what have we got? 2 points. We said the best we can get is 2 points back. That might not make a lot of difference to us in the table, mightn't it? Yeah, it's a good one. Good one. The only thing they say, sometimes stuff comes out as an appeal that you can use in future discussions. So possibly. But we'll just have to wait and see. It's an interesting insight, though.
Yeah, I did think about that, actually, and I'm glad that comment's come in. I just think I didn't really want to appeal anyway in the first place when we did, because I did think we'd get over the line, and I just thought, why risk anything? Who knows? I mean, you'd probably say that if we were going to get more points taken off, then it would only just be two, but even then, it's still a risk, isn't it? You don't know what's going to happen.
I actually get that argument, but they might just say, well, actually, we'll see what happens.
Can you withdraw an appeal? We don't know.
Well, yeah, I assume you can, but Premier League wouldn't want it, would they?
Okay, last couple, and then we'll finish off, because plenty to do, and I'm sure you've got plenty to do as well, Gav. Joe's not here to defend himself on this one, but someone says, don't get carried away, Joe. Another year of Dyche football will be horrendous. So obviously in reference to our conversation with
I think that's a fully justifiable comments, but it was Dyche football last night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Would you want another year of that? I would, personally, but it's what we need next season is enormously important, obviously, isn't it, about retaining our Premier League status. I think that's all we're looking at this moment in time. As Joe said quite rightly, it's who leads us into Bramley Moor is probably the more pertinent question.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to see if I can see any more questions coming in. Are you going to the game, Brentford?
I'll be there. I'll be. I did do the fan park now before the game. You know,
I saw a picture of you. Yeah. So what was that about? Like, go on, reveal.
Myself and Darren Griffiths, who are an works driver, well known. Go on, like, talk about like pre-match stats and stuff. But last night, you know, being the derby, was not exactly full of positive stats. Just had to like tone it down, and you ended up talking about just generally. So, but hopefully, a few more positive stats on Saturday, and review some of the good stats from last night.
Okay. Well, I've got one more interesting one here, and then I'll finish off with a positive comment. So, Stephen says, again, this is probably in reference to what we were talking about earlier. Imagine selling an Arnott and Brantley for 150 million to waste 30 million on journeymen like Shea Adams and Brownhill. is that harsh or?
Well, but we might do that, but it's the balance of the 120 million, isn't it, really, that we need? Isn't it? That's why we're doing it. We're not doing it just as part of a trading. If we did that, I'm not saying that we will sell them, you know, saying that, but we're not selling them as part of some sort of trading strategy, are we? We're selling them because we need the cash, and we need to live within profit and sustainability rules. Those are the reasons.
If we had one choice to sell one player in the summer, which are out of an Arnott and Branthwaite, who would you pick?
Well, it's obviously an Arnott will be the, you know,
I agree.
The option. You'd want to keep Branthwaite was colossus last night. You forget what a young, inexperienced lad he is, as well as scoring as well. He likes his goal. Who's he scored against? Is it Chelsea, Spurs and Liverpool his goals against?
Yeah. I mean, he's on a threat,
isn't he? That, isn't he?
He's a threat.
Yeah, actually, he was the second half, he should have scored. I know he's offside, but he had a great opportunity, didn't he, last night?
Okay, well, the final comment then says, being humming, you lost the league at Goodison Park to my mates all morning. What's your workplace been like, Gav, full of any Reds? Has it been quite tense? I know it's been quite quiet in our office this morning, but there's always plenty of Blues in our office.
In my experience, it's always good to go into the office after a derby victory. You've just never had much opportunity. And the worst thing about it, we've had that many defeats. It's not even mentioned when Liverpool win, really, to be fair.
No. Okay, well, we will leave it there. Joe Thomas has gone to Sean Dyche's press conference at Finch Farm, so he has left me and Gav here, but give us a like, give us a subscribe, share the podcast, like us on Facebook, Everton FC, Liverpool Echo, and again, subscribe to the Royal Blue YouTube channel. We are going to be back tomorrow at some point, so keep an eye out for that pod. That'll be a full Brentford preview, and obviously, you know, probably will maybe mention the derby again.
Absolutely.
Why not? Absolutely, why not? Nothing else to say, Gav, unless you've got any impressions to talk about.
One of the great Goodison nights, and I'm glad that everybody made the most of it, including the players and management.
I think that's really a fantastic way to finish. So, yeah, I've been Eaton Kroll with Joe Thomas, who's gone, still here, has been Gav Buckland, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.